The title of our next presentation is Protect Yourself from Financial Fraud. And we have with us today Mark Lays, Director of Communications, California Department of Business Oversight from Sacramento, California. Everyone, please give Mr. Lays a very warm welcome.
Is my microphone on? Okay, good. Hi, I'm Mark Lays. I'm the Director of Communications with the California Department of Business Oversight. I had a very light lunch. I didn't have M&Ms. I only had M's. Anyway, happy to be here. In your 80th year, that's a great milestone, so congratulations to everybody. Our department is a state agency. It is headed by a woman named Jan Lynn Owen. Her title is Commissioner of Business Oversight. She was appointed by Governor Jerry Brown as of July 1st of last year. Prior to that, she was Commissioner of the Department of Corporations for the state of California. And she got the promotion because her other job was eliminated. What happened as of July is that we merged two departments, the Department of Corporations and the Department of Financial Institutions. We merged the two into the new Department of Business Oversight. So she was honored to be able to leave the old job and get the appointment as the new Commissioner of Business Oversight, being the very first in the state of California. The other two departments actually existed almost exactly the same amount of time, 100 years each, in various incarnations. We regulate financial services in the state of California. Financial services, I mean, there's always been money, and there's always been loaning money and banks, more or less. But things change. There are ATMs now. There are obviously credit cards. There are debit cards. There's electronic payments. There's even virtual currency now that you may have heard of, bitcoins and other versions of that. And we are responsible, we're the principal regulator in the state of all those things. So the Department of Financial Institutions, that's the easy one to describe, they regulated banks, credit unions, and what we call money transmitters. That's things like Western Union, when you wire money, or PayPal, when you don't technically wire money, but you use electronic middleman to transmit those funds. Those are both licensees of the state of California. The Department of Corporations was a little more complicated. We used to, and all of the responsibilities are now lodged in the new Department of Business Oversight. So we used to, and still do, regulate non-depository lenders. Now, what does that mean? That's banks loan money, but so do a lot of other folks. You can get a loan to buy a car, and you might do it through the car dealer. You can get a payday loan, which are storefronts up and down the state of California, in fact, across the country, where you can walk in and get, in this state, you can get up to $300 maximum transaction as an advance on your next paycheck. So typically, those are very short-term loans. Relatively high cost. They're 15% interest rate, which annualizes out to almost 500% a year. It's a last resort, but it is legal in California, and a lot of people do rely on that for their for emergency situations if they do come up short. So that's another example of who we license. We also license escrow companies, residential mortgage lenders, with an important caveat. A lot of you may have your home loan from Chase or Bank of America, Citigroup. Those are national banks, and we do not license and regulate those. Those are licensed and regulated by the federal government. We do state-based residential mortgage lenders. And we also license mortgage loan servicers, because there are a lot of companies that act as middlemen to collect your mortgage payment. That's who you send your mortgage payment to. And then they've either bought the loan from the bank, or then they remit the money onto the bank that owns the mortgage. And then the other element that we regulate is securities. And what a security is, basically any fractionalized interest in an investment. Best example is a stock. If you own a share of stock in IBM, that stock certificate, that's share of stock, is a security. And a good way to describe it is we're the state version of the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC. So if you want to, a lot of securities, and the example I used, for example, is IBM, they're registered with the U.S. SEC. So they really don't deal with us directly. But there are a whole lot of businesses in the state of California that only operate within the state. If they want to issue securities and offer those to the general public, then they need to obtain a permit from the Department of Business Oversight. So that's an important part of what we do. And there's an assortment of some other various things, but one example, because I've been working on this for the last 2 days on an issue, is franchises. Most states actually rely on the Federal Trade Commission to deal with franchise registration. California is one of 9 states that has our own system, and we, the Department of Business Oversight, are responsible for franchise registration in the state of California. Again, national franchises, McDonald's, Subway, they actually register with the federal government because they're in so many states. But if they operate only in California, or if they operate in a limited number of states, they might register with the state of California. So that's what we do. When we talk about our mission in general, we have it boiled down to 3 elements. We ensure an efficient and accessible financial services marketplace in California. We enforce California's financial service laws to protect the public from fraud. And we educate the public about the risks and rewards of investing and of using certain financial products and services. And that third bullet is why I'm here. I am here to help educate. For folks like you, I think it's a matter more of reminding than necessarily educating, but glad to do it in any case. So when we talk about protecting ourselves from financial fraud, we realize that there's a lot of ways that unsavory elements in our society, mostly criminals, can get or try to get access to your finances, your money, or your personal financial information so that they can get your money. And sometimes it seems like there's nothing we can do. If you're wired into the internet, if you pay your bills over the phone or online, if you get your bills in the mail and mail checks back to folks, we've all got certain points of vulnerability, and it's difficult to eliminate all these frauds in our society, but it's relatively easy to protect yourself from fraud. So unfortunately, it winds up being, if you make yourself a little bit more protected from fraud, they'll go on to somebody else who's an easier target. Now that's unfortunate for the easier target, but at least we're safe. And the ultimate goal, of course, would be have everybody make themselves a difficult target, and these folks go back to something else like robbing banks rather than stealing credit cards. That was a joke, by the way. So let me talk a little bit about how financial fraud can occur. And some of this we don't have direct oversight over, but it's important to talk about it holistically, from top to bottom, because, again, any vulnerability that a fraudster can identify, they'll try to slip in and target you. So one of the ways they do this is to get your personal information. And some of this is real obvious. Some of this you already know. But, again, it's worth reminding us about. So how can predators get your information? Well, they can steal your mail. So how do we prevent that? Well, we can pick up our mail as often as we can, leaving it in overnight or a couple days. Again, just raises the profile of you as a target. When we dispose of our trash, it's good to shred or burn a lot of the written correspondence. Some of that has very specific personal information that you definitely don't want anybody to get. You don't want anybody to get access to your Social Security number, your bank account numbers, any personal identification numbers, PIN numbers that you might have. But a lot of times, they can get what seems to be fairly innocent information by itself, and they can piece things together. So it's a good idea to shred anything that's got your name and address on it, because they might pull out one piece of paper from your trash that's got your name and address, another that might be a solicitation from a credit card company, or some kind of, even if it's not an account-related correspondence, but even if it's just one of these, you know, standard throwaway communications from your bank, then they know your name, your address, they know your bank, and they can start building a profile. A lot of the times they get things from the internet. If you've got a Facebook page and you've got personal information on there, they love that. A lot of times if you've got family members, they'll list their family because they're proud of you. They want to talk about you. They say, hey, you know, Uncle Jim was at the CCB convention today in Sacramento. So they can look at information and compile it that way. A lot of times mailing lists, even if we opt out of sharing information for privacy considerations, a lot of times we don't get them all. And that information is available through a variety of sources. And there's a lot of companies out there that are not insidious in and of themselves. They're not out to get you. But they're in the business of compiling information and then selling it. So they might compile as much information as possible and then sell it to Walmart or a local florist even to try to so that they have a list of prospects for business solicitations. So they might just want to send you an email that says, hey, don't forget Mother's Day. But point is that information is out there. And it's accessible by not only legitimate businesses, but sometimes very illegitimate businesses. Other things they do is sometimes they can just over the phone. They might call up, and it seems like a fairly innocent conversation, but they can get maybe one piece of information or another piece of information and trick you into exposing something that, again, helps to build the profile. And then, you know, there's other things like you know, just news coverage. If you're if you're installed as president of your local Rotary Club, there might be something in the newspaper. Obituaries will often list family members. And unfortunately, when there's a death in the family, people are very susceptible to emotional pitches. So that's the way that a lot of information can be had. And then how is it processed and packaged and presented as solicitations for folks like us? Well, there's a few ways. I'll go through a couple of them. And a lot of these you've heard of, maybe some you haven't. We've got, we try to keep track of these different frauds. These are clever people. Makes you wonder why they don't go into legitimate business, because it seems like they could do very well for themselves. But in the meantime, they target with all kinds of different schemes. Sometimes bait and switch. It's a classic example. Car dealers will advertise one car, and you get there and, we sold that 10 minutes ago, but we've got this other jalopy that you might be interested in. That's a classic example of bait and switch. But there's other ways to do that too. Any kind of come on like that that entices you to call or respond to a phone call or an advertisement or an internet ad can do that. I don't know if you've ever ordered anything over the phone, but sometimes you'll see something advertised on TV or radio and says, if you call, you can get this for $10. And you say, well, that seems like a good deal. Let me do that. And they try to upsell you. So they say, now, if you, for just another shipping and handling charge, I can send you two. Or you can get the deluxe edition if you just give us an extra $20. So those kind of things are a good example. And it, the best way to avoid those is to avoid them altogether. The second best way is to learn to say no. Just stick to what you want and make it that way. Charity scams, one of the most insidious things of all. Every time there's a natural disaster, most of us are just appalled and horrified. There's a small group of people, though, that that are gleeful because it's another opportunity to fraudulently raise funds. Whether it's a hurricane or an earthquake, the earthquake in Chile, for example, people might just cold call somebody and say, hey, you know, they're in bad way. If you can give me your credit card, I'll put you down for $20, and we can help that way. Best way to avoid those is to use legitimate charitable organizations, things you're very familiar with. Obviously, things like Red Cross. In your case, you've got the CCB. You know, you can contribute to the CCB. I assume this is nonprofit. Yes. So if you use legitimate, well-known organizations that you've got experience with, that's a good way to deal with that. I don't know how many are local, but there was a big, big accident on the I-5 freeway yesterday. And we're the other smaller, even smaller slice of people that feel terrible for the victims, but then gird ourselves for possible frauds relating to that. I'm not sure how it would manifest, but it's just, unfortunately, there are people that will do that. One of the things, another way to do to scam people is to offer you something free. It's kind of related to the bait and switch. And then get you in a position where you might be vulnerable and then hard sell you. One of the most obvious is the free lunch pitch. So it's come to maybe a ballroom like this in your community. We're going to offer free lunch, no strings attached. You come in, you see this, you get the spread. It's great lunch, but they want to sell you something. So they'll close the doors. They won't lock you in. That's kidnapping. But they want to sell you. And so again, it's sometimes they'll have plants in the audience too that say, that sounds like a great idea. I'm going to do that, and try to get the ball rolling that way. So just beware of introductory seminars, free lunch seminars, those kind of things. And related to all of those is, and this is more of a style of pitch than a specific scam, but beware of any kind of immediate action required. If they've got you on the phone or got you in the room, they're going to say, this is the deal, it's a great deal. You're going to say, well, okay, let me think about it. And they're going to say, well, no, then it'll be too late. You got to do now or not at all. And if it's that urgent, then it's probably a scam. If they can't wait, if they're really going to turn down your money 24 hours later, then you probably don't want to do business with them. So always be wary of that. And again, it's typical, because once they've got you, once you answer your phone or answer your door or sit down in a room like this, that's when they want to do the high pressure sales tactics. Then we get into specific structures. You've all heard of Ponzi schemes. The biggest problem from our perspective as a regulator and enforcer with Ponzi schemes is we don't know about it. I mean, we're not looking over everybody's shoulder 24 hours a day. We couldn't if we wanted to. But the Ponzi schemes are something that, again, seems too good to be true. Give us $5,000. We're going to guarantee you 20% return for every year for the next 20 years. So, well, that sounds like a good idea, a good deal in today's market. Well, if you give them $5,000 and the first year you get 20%, you get a $1,000 dividend, that seems like a good deal. The problem is, most of the time, well, the way the Ponzi schemes work is they pay off the early investors with new money. So their investment, per se, is not earning that kind of interest, that kind of return. They're just taking the new money and paying the early investors. And so good for you if you're an early investor. It's the ones at the end of the line that get gypped out of the money. But the problem from our perspective is nobody complains when you're making money. So if you get your 20%, you're not going to call us and complain. At least most people won't. I actually encourage you to do it because, again, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. But because the early investors are the ones that are paid off with the new money, they're happy. They don't complain. We don't find out about it until there are people that start to lose their money. Certainly, at least that they don't get their investments that they were promised, their returns that they were promised. And those are, by then, it's often too late. There's no assets left. They've gone on and squandered the money or moved out of the country or just moved on out of our reach. And that's the unfortunate thing about that kind of thing. There's a lot of products that that are legitimate in and of themselves, but can be subject to fraud. And those are things like reverse mortgages, annuities, life insurance viaticals. A lot of times, we might be in a position, especially late in life, when we don't have a high income. We might have a big expense, maybe due to health, and we don't have a lot of assets. No, at least we're cash poor. But we might have our house. We might have a pension. We might have a life insurance policy. So the temptation is to monetize those somehow. Somehow leverage those for cash. Again, there are ways to do that legitimately, but sometimes those kind of schemes are fraudulent. So what that does is it gives me an opportunity to really pitch our services, what we offer to consumers and folks like you in California. What we deal with most are our own licensees, and so they come into us for licenses. They apply, we review, we examine them. We'll enforce the laws against violators. But when consumers have issues, what they can do is, first of all, they can file a complaint with us. And that helps us with our investigation because, again, if we don't know that there's some kind of concern out there, then we just don't know where to even start. But there's ways to protect yourself before you invest or before you purchase something. And you can call or use our website to check out whether a bank or a lender or an escrow company has a license. If they're not licensed, I would recommend strongly that you not use them because there's something fishy there. If they are licensed, unfortunately, that doesn't guarantee that they're saints. But we also can tell you whether or not there's a disciplinary action against them or disciplinary actions against them. And so you can comparison shop. If you've got a choice of escrow companies, three escrow companies, one of them not licensed, forget him. Two of them are licensed, but one of them has a disciplinary action against them. You might want to dismiss that too and go with the one that's got a better record. That's true too with individuals, professionals. They need to be licensed and registered with us. And we use a national database for investment advisors and broker dealers, which are like stock brokers. So the advantage there is that if they might be from Illinois, even though they're here now, and they might have had several disciplinary actions against them in Illinois. Well, we know that because all the states share the same database. 20 years ago, that wasn't true. But we can help you look up an individual. Mr. Jones says he's wants to be your investment advisor. We can look and see if he's got disciplinary history. And that'll help you make your decision. So when you check out your professional with us, again, we can't guarantee that they're saints, but we can tell you whether or not there's a history there. And that should help you make better decisions. There are lots of different schemes that are involved with the internet. And so you need to be careful when you use the internet. I mean, that's kind of goes without saying, I know, but there are just some things to watch out for. When you get emails, well, I'll give you an example. There's something we call sweepstake or lottery fraud. And it's where you get an approach from somebody, maybe a telephone call, maybe an email, maybe a letter, that says, hey, you won the lottery, and you won the Canadian lottery. It's $50,000, but you got to pay the taxes before we can send you the check. So send us a check for $300, and we'll send you a check for $50,000. Well, anytime you got to pay money to get money in a situation like that, you should think twice, three times. I got a call from somebody, this is a while back now, but very nice gentleman, and he started talking to me. He says, I got this solicitation. It seems legitimate, but I'm just a little bit concerned. And it says, they say I won the Canadian lottery, and all I got to do is send him a little bit of money. I said, well, let me ask you a question. Did you enter the Canadian lottery? And he says, no. And I said, then you didn't win. So that's a good test. If somebody says that you won a drawing or a lottery or a sweepstakes and you don't remember buying a ticket or entering a contest, then there's a pretty good chance that's a scam. If they ask for money up front, not a good thing. Another one that and this is terrible because my own wife, I actually had to stop her from pursuing it. She got, and I think we may have all gotten these, you get something in the mail and it's a check. And it's made out to you, and it says it's a check for $5,000. It says all you got to do is deposit this, but then you need to send us back $1,000. Now, we know that we're not asking you for $1,000. We're giving you $5,000. We just need your check from $1,000, you know, kind of earnest money. So you go to the bank, you deposit the check. They actually accept the check because it looks like a legitimate check. And for all practical purposes, it is, but they won't. There's not enough funds there to back it up. So you send the $1,000, your check clears, but their check, their $5,000 check doesn't clear. So you can do the math. You're out $1,000. You're not out the $5,000 because that was found money, but you're out the $1,000. And they come in various versions of that. So always be very, very careful of that kind of thing. Ask twice. Ask for some help. Ask for information. Again, they're gonna be anxious. They're gonna suggest some urgency to the transaction. But if they can't wait for your money, then it's not worth doing. There's a lot of what they call phishing with a PH on the internet, and some of this stuff is just terrible for its own sake. They have viruses in it, and it's just malicious for its own sake. But a lot of times what they're doing is they're phishing for information, personal information about you, so that they can use that to get money from you or to steal your identity so that they can get control of your assets later. So be careful about the kind of information you put in. Again, sometimes it seems fairly innocent. It's, hey, if you all you need to do is enter your name, address, email, telephone number, shoe size, hat size, just give us all this information and we'll enter you into this contest to win two free tickets to Las Vegas. Well, you don't need to go to Las Vegas because you're gambling by just filling those kind of things out. So again, never be very, very cautious about any information you give through the email, through online solicitations. If you've got setups with your banks or your credit card companies so that you can pay online. Those are usually very secure. But there was a lot of news in the last few days even about something called the Heartbleed bug, which exposed some vulnerabilities to a longstanding, supposedly secure sharing system. I'm not an IT guy, so I'm not explaining it well. But what it tells you, what it says is that even longstanding systems that seem to be secure for a lot of years, there are vulnerabilities in those. So a lot of, you may get communication in the next, over the next couple of weeks from companies that you're doing, that you've done business with online, that tell you that your old email or your old passwords are not good anymore. Now, there's a lot of truth to that, but having said what I just said, you may also get solicitations that seem legitimate that say, all we need is your password. Give us your old password and your new password, and we'll set it up for you. That could be phishing, looking for your passwords. So make sure that you're dealing with a legitimate agent of your bank or credit card company when you're doing that kind of information. You might want to do it in person, or you might want to call them. If you get approached with that kind of solicitation, be very, very, very cautious. If you approach them, then that's a different issue, and you should be able to do something on a secure basis. I could go on for a while. You know, just beware of telephone scams. A lot of folks, fraudsters will still come door to door looking for things, because a face-to-face contact can result in better results for them. The last warning I want to give you, at least for now, is what we call affinity marketing or affinity fraud. And what it means is it's somebody that you think you can trust or want to trust because you've got some other kind of association with them, some other kind of affinity. It might be somebody in your church. It might be somebody in your neighborhood. It might be somebody who speaks your language. We have a lot of problems with ethnic communities where Koreans will target Koreans, Spanish speakers will target Spanish speakers. And no offense to anybody, but it might be somebody in this room, somebody that you've known for years that says, hey, have I got a deal for you? And you want to trust them, but don't let your barriers down. If they're legitimate, they're not going to mind being checked out. Say, listen, I like what you're saying, and I've known you for years, but I'm going to call Mark at Department of Business Oversight, and I'm going to check your broker's license. You don't mind, do you? And they're going to say, no, of course I don't mind. So affinity marketing is something that we get a lot of. And again, it's sad because sometimes they seem to be very upstanding citizens and members of the community, and it turns out it's a fraud. Basically, before you make any financial decision, you need to think about it on a rational basis. Think with your head, not your heart. Protect your information so that you're not a victim of identity theft. Make sure that contacts you've got with outside companies are legitimate. You might want to get references, not only check out their licensing, but even get references so that if your brother-in-law uses an investment advisor and has for 20 years, that's a great thing. Again, doesn't guarantee that he's a saint, but those kind of references are good. If you do get your personal information stolen or compromised, there are ways to shield yourself from further damage or actual damage. You know, if your credit cards are lost or stolen, you call the company, have them canceled or suspended. If you suspect mail fraud, you can contact the U.S. Postal Inspector. They've got a great system. It's technically a different division of the post office. So you got the folks that deliver your mail. These postal inspectors are real bulldogs. They love to go after folks. So if you suspect something that's mail fraud, and it doesn't take much to be mail fraud. If you mail somebody a check, if you try to buy something on eBay, you mail them a check and you never get your product, that's mail fraud. So they'll take those kind of complaints. Again, they can't guarantee that you'll get your money back, but at least you can report a bad actor that way. If your Social Security or Medicare card is stolen, call the Social Security Administration and make sure that they understand that there's an issue there. There are ways to freeze your credit if you get, say, not just lose a credit card, but maybe lose your whole wallet, or if you really do think that somebody's using your identity. There are ways to actually freeze your credit on an ongoing basis, and it's a little bit of a hassle when you want to access it then for a legitimate reason. Maybe a month from now you want to buy a new TV at Walmart. So you go, what you have to do is unfreeze it, and you can unfreeze it for just that transaction. It's complicated, but there are ways to do that, and I mean, it's not complicated, but it's just a little bit involved. But there are ways to do that, and that's one way to be very, very safe. And of course, check your credit report. New laws say that you can access your credit report free every year, once a year for free. Do it. It's interesting, if nothing else, just to see the variations in the scores. But you could see something there that that you didn't know was there. It could show some activity that you didn't expect because you weren't responsible for it. If you see that kind of activity, then you can contact the credit reporting agency or the source of that report from the agency. Say it's a Walmart transaction, and you can find out what it was, what it is, when it happened, and if it's legitimate. Let me just add one more thing. Again, this is something that we deal with, and that is mortgage fraud and mortgage loan modification fraud. There are new laws in the state of California. I think everybody here is California. So there are new laws in the state of California that prohibit loan modification companies from charging you up front. So it used to be that they'd advertise on the radio or maybe send you something in email or through the mail and say, hey, I can help you get your mortgage loan reduced. We can modify your loan, reduce your payment. I can save you, $300 a month for the next 20 years. So think about how much money that is. All you got to do is send me $1,000 up front and I'll do it for you. Well, there's a couple things. One is, if they ask for money up front, again, it's worth thinking twice or three times about doing it. Secondly is, frankly, they're not going to do anything that you can't do yourself. Because what they need from you is all your loan information. And then they're going to approach your bank and they're going to say, hey, I'm calling on behalf of Mr. Jones and we want to get a loan modification. Well, not only can you do that, but the bank is probably going to be more responsive to you as the mortgage holder than a third party. And the most important thing of all is it is illegal now to ask for money up front. So if they ask for money up front, not only should you not give them money up front, you should report them to us and through a complaint, and we can sic the authorities on them. The one exception to that, by the way, is if they're a law firm or an attorney. The attorneys always manage to exempt themselves from these laws. So a law firm still, they're not violating the law if they ask for money up front, a retainer of some kind, but they're violating good common financial sense, at least from your perspective. So beware of those kind of approaches and schemes. It's tax season, and so again, things like tax refund anticipation loans or offers, those kind of things are ripe this time and prevalent this time of year. So be careful of those kinds of approaches. I can give out a number. What I'm thinking about doing is making sure that your leadership has our contact information, so that if you want to check out a broker dealer or a financial services company, maybe they can post on their website or in their newsletter the contact information. But just so you know, we do have a toll-free, live-staffed call center. So during business hours, on regular business days, you will get a live person. And they can talk you through anything that we deal with or offer. So they can help you check a license. They can help you file a complaint. They can help answer questions. Or they can refer you to something. For example, there is a separate Department of Insurance in the state. So if it's something that deals strictly with an insurance policy or an insurance agent, we would refer you over to Department of Insurance. But we can help you with that too. And our toll-free line is 866-275-2677. So that's 866-275-2677. And again, there's live people that will answer your calls during the business days. Our website is www.dbo.ca.gov. So that's www.dbo for Department of Business Oversight .ca.gov. And a lot of we list our licensees. We have complaint forms online. We have other information. We have other resources for consumers and investors to use. So that's kind of a nutshell approach to financial fraud and protecting yourself from same. We like to work with consumers, and we like to work with groups like yours to make sure that people have this information and this caution so that they don't become victims of fraud. We long for the day when nobody's a victim of fraud, but there's big money out there in taking money from people instead of working for a living. So as long as there are fraudsters, there's going to be fraud and there's going to be victims. I just hope that it's not anybody in this room. So thank you for letting me come and speak to you today. I'm not sure how we're going to do this, if you want to take questions now or if you want me to wait a bit.
We have time for two quick questions. Okay. Ed found two standing in the back, so... And everyone, you do have the 800 number as well as the website. And remember to get your credit reports checked once a year. You have a very accessible option that CCB had advocacy involvement in. Yes. Through Lainey Feingold and Linda Dardarian, who are two of our silver sponsors for this convention as well. Yes. And if you need that information, contact us, and we will get that for you. First question, please.
This is Rick Plath from, is this thing on?
Yes, okay. Just get close to it.
Okay. It's Rick Plath from Burbank, currently, anyway. Anyway, have you heard of the scheme where a telemarketer will call and say, we sent you out a product, we will expect payment?
Well, maybe it depends specifically. I mean, I've heard of things similar to that, yes.
That's what I was curious about, because it seems like lately I've been getting calls like that. And then I call the person back. I go, okay, now I'm recording, and I need you to give me the information in terms of when this supposedly occurred. They go, you're not allowed to record me, and they hang up on you. But it seems – or you've got an agency saying this is the last call we're going to make to you in terms of the your credit or the loan that you're look for, or whatever the case may be. So it's weird.
Anyway, yeah, I could see that happening. Again, just if they're asking for payment for a product and you didn't get the product, there's something very wrong there. You might want to report to postal inspector on that, because that would be mail fraud. I was talking to a woman the other day, and she says, I have this collection agency calling me for a loan that I paid off years ago. At least I think I did, and I've got the documentation, and they said they're going to put a lien on my house if I don't pay. And I said, well, it sounds to me like you've paid, that you've got the documentation. You should offer them the documentation. If they don't want to accept the documentation, then there's something fishy. And, by the way, you don't own a house, so they can't put a lien on your home. So what was true in that case is they were reading from a script, and, again, just kind of fishing for somebody vulnerable enough to send them a check. Okay, who's next?
Okay, our second, which is our last question that Ed saw there in the back.
Thank my you. Name is Mona Craig from East LA. I've gone to Walmart many times. That's my second home. And I've often heard them say, hi, are you a registered voter? And people say yes. And then they say, can you help us with this initiative? Mm. How weary should we be of that initiative thing?
Well, most of those are probably legitimate. It's a free speech issue, and it's been litigated and legislated on. People have the right to ask you for your to contribute or not. Well, to contribute as well, but to aid the cause by signing an initiative, a petition. Here's my personal philosophy on that. Even if it's something, I mean, they could come up and say, "Hey, do you like kittens? This supports kittens. If you sign this, there'll be more kittens." You know, and so even if it's something that you really like. I just say no thank you. If it's something that I really support, I'll find a way to sign a legitimate petition. The problem with those is not only do you give your name and address, but you do have to sign your signature. So they could get a copy of all those things. So just politely decline and move on. You know, that they'll get enough signatures or not without your signature. Even if it's something you support, I would tend to avoid signing something like that just because of the potential risk.
Thank you so very much again. Please.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, we have the contact information that was just given. So if any of us have any more questions, you have the number. And we're only able to take two questions. Sorry about that. With our time. So thank you for being with us today, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.